Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everyone, to Aggressive Negotiations, and the podcast that continually blows your Star Wars minds. We're back. That's right, the Jedi Masters. We're here to have another great episode. And, John, I'm so excited to be here. Of course, I apologize. Allow me to introduce the one, the only, the indomitable, John Mills.
Oh, well, thank you. That's high praise coming from the one, the only, the indomitable, Matthew Rushing. So I am, of course, happy to be here. Aggressive Negotiations is, you know, the world can be a little crazy sometimes. It can be a little overwhelming. This is your little corner of Star Wars goodness here on the Nerd Party Network. We're very happy to bring it to you.
And as you say that, I'm reminded of something that I need to share with you and our listeners. We got a wonderful review on iTunes today, which I don't know if there was some sort of like dust in my office or something, but I don't know. I got something in my eye. But it's exactly what I needed to hear, and I really wanted to thank this fan. They said, "Finest Star Wars podcast in the galaxy, B Movie Man 17." And this is what they had to say, and I just wanted to share it because I wanted the listeners to understand what this meant to both of us.
Yeah.
It said, "This is hands down the most informative and fun Star Wars podcast going!" Exclamation point. Can't recommend enough. Matthew and John really know their stuff. The topics they choose are so intriguing and thought-provoking. They cover the stuff in the Star Wars universe that I've always wondered about. These guys are the reason I look forward to my commute every Tuesday. The only complaint? It's not on every day. And because I'd sure be a daily listener. Keep up the great work. The Force is certainly with you both. B Movie Man 17.
Yeah.
John and I will do this for you daily. We just need to work out some kind of, you know, I compensation.
You know what, though? I'll say this, that as much as we want to do it daily, we will work double hard to make sure that the weekly ones are just as special as they've been. We really, I mean, this is, as Matt has rightly pointed out many times, Star Wars is a passion for us. We know it's a passion for a lot of people, and we're glad to share it with everybody. And in terms of the topics, I have a topic, I think, Matt, that we should discuss. Because last week, for our 50th episode, we released our audio commentary for Star Wars.
Yes, we did.
Episode
yes, we
for
did.
A New Hope. And during that, there was something that struck me that really like stuck with me after we recorded it. We had a point where
did you step on something in Mos Eisley?
Yes, it was Bantha Poot. Well, actually, I guess we don't see any Banthas.
It could be Ronto Poodoo, right?
It would have to be Ronto. Man, it would have to be Ronto. Anyway,
Dubak could be Dubak.
No, I don't picture. That I mean the poop episode, that's one we gotta earn a little more goodwill from the fans before we have the poop episode.
Let's not go there. Okay, your question.
Although I will say Tatooine, giant sandbox. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, there don't seem to be any cats around. That's so odd. There's no Loth cats.
That's why everybody is so on edge. More cats, more happiness. But the thing that stuck with me was that at the dinner scene with Luke, Owen, and Beru, was we talked a little bit about Owen. And so I want to bring to you, I think we should discuss Owen. And specifically, something that struck me was when we were discussing him, we talked about, and maybe this is a function of age, that Owen has become more sympathetic over time. He was originally the authoritarian father figure that you needed to get away from to go chase your dreams from home. But Owen has really become a more sympathetic figure. And so I wanted to posit to you a crazy thought that I had, that Owen is actually a better Jedi than the Jedi. And the basis of that is that Owen does what the Jedi all claimed they were about, which is knuckling down, doing their duty and keeping their eyes on what was important for the protection and well-being of the people they were responsible for.
So what you're trying to say in Augustinian language is that Owen has been able to put the main thing, that the main love in his life, that he understands the order of loves in his life, and he's been able to put the right one at the top, and everything else follows. And therefore, what the Jedi couldn't do, he can do because he has the correct order in his life. Ah, that's interesting.
You made it sound a lot more intellectual than I did, where my words were basically just, oh, and good things do.
No, that's how Yoda says it.
Yeah, been spending time with that little green monster. But, oh, wait, no, that's Fenway up in Boston. Anyway, Owen, I think also, I mean, for me, I've had the good fortune of becoming a father. And I think that has helped me also look at Owen through a different lens. Now, I know not everybody's a parent, and so I'm not saying that like I have any sort of special knowledge because I am, but I would offer that Owen also becomes more sympathetic, because when the next generation shows up, the older generation sort of recognizes, well, you know what? I had my shot. I did my thing, and now my responsibility is to this person for whom I am responsible. And I mean, you know, even to the point where Owen and Beru, we don't know that exact moment where they died. But I like to imagine that Owen and Beru, they weren't just dragged out and killed. In my head, they refused to say anything. When those troopers showed up, Owen and Beru made the ultimate sacrifice for Luke. They actually did treat him like a son. They went to the mat for him.
So obviously everybody knows here on the network, I'm doing the Harry Potter podcast with Drea Kaufman, Owl Post, and I like to think of them as the Muggle family that Luke gets left with, that treats him well, that raises him well, treats him like a son, gives him a sense of identity and purpose and understanding about the world, tries to teach him responsibility and what it means to be a man, to work hard, all of those things, and prepare him for whatever's going to come next. Because I think you're exactly right that Owen and Beru, I think they understand the charge that they have. I feel like that they didn't just, Obi-Wan doesn't just drop him off and there's no conversation about what they're being asked to do.
Right.
And so I think they understand that. And I mean, you can see from the comics too, the Star Wars comics that have been coming out from Marvel, which are canon, have had some issues with a young Luke and from Obi-Wan's point of view, and that Uncle Owen is very protective of Luke. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want him mixed up in the same things that his half-brother got mixed up in.
Is it, well, stepbrother, and, right? They don't actually share blood.
Well, stepbrother.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well,
no, because I'm pretty sure I'm pretty sure Owen introduces himself as stepbrother. And because I think he's from Kleeg's previous marriage along the way. Now,
that would make sense because he's not old enough to be their son. You're absolutely right. I mean, he's too old to be their son.
Right. But I mean, it's also sort of a thing where relationships in Star Wars can sometimes be a fungible thing.
Yeah, so, yes.
Okay, but all of this said, and I like you citing the Dursleys, because is this a cultural shift sort of thing where the Lars family, in a sense, were the Dursleys of the 70s? Everybody looked at Uncle Owen as, you know, oh man, he's keeping Luke from his dreams. It's this bad scene that Luke's got to get away from. He's living in this backwards farm. Is it that we have changed, or is it just that, is it something that maybe the older audience, you know, the parental generation saw in Owen that saw, and we're just coming to realize it? Do you think it was always built into the text, or do you think that it's over time we've just come to view the Lars family differently?
I think you're absolutely right. I think we've come to view it differently because we've gotten older and our perception has changed. You know, your perception is your reality. And so the thing about that is that we understand then that Owen's not a bad person. Mm-hmm. He's trying to do the best for this boy that he can. And I think what it really lends to is it's another father-son type relationship to which Lucas is working out as he's creating the Star right. Wars saga. And all of Star Wars is about fathers and sons, and we see that throughout every single film.
Yep.
And this one, clearly, Luke's first father figure that we come to know is Uncle Owen. And he's not a bad guy. He's just, he's seen by Luke as the one that's keeping him from his dreams. Whereas, if you look at it from Uncle Owen's perspective, he's trying to keep his son safe. The person he thinks of as his son safe.
And that's, you know, the thing is, I would love more exploration of Owen. I seriously would. I mean, if anybody from, you know, Disney, Lucas books or, you know, whatever is listening and you want to give a new kid a shot at writing a book about Owen and his perspective on things, hey, yeah, I'll work for cheap. I really, because I think that there is a great thing to explore also with Owen, because I think that his dedication to Luke isn't just rooted in being a decent person or being given the charge of this child or anything like that. I'm not saying that that's a limiting thing. I'm saying that I think that his dedication to Luke is also stems from the love for his own dad and his love for Shmi, because obviously he knew Shmi for a decade as his mother. And I would really love to see somebody explore that gap for Owen. I almost wonder if the live series would have touched on that. I imagine it must have. You know, the perspective of Owen is somebody who's trying to do right as well by, you know, the family that he did have, because Owen, his family is Beru. You know, his dad is gone. Shmi is killed right after he meets Anakin. And, you know, his stepbrother is gone. Owen, in a large sense, is a guy without a family. Like, do you think that his dedication to Luke might partially be informed by his desire to like hold on to the one bit of family that he has left?
I think that's a really good thought. And it makes sense that a man who is a simple farmer, who knows what Owen's life would be without Luke there. You know, would Owen Beru have stayed there? You know, if Kleeg died, you know, and Shmi is gone, is this where we want to spend the rest of our lives? You know, is there something else that he wants to do?
Right.
And, but does he make the right choice, the choice that any truly responsible, self-sacrificing person would, and realize that when this child is brought to him, this could be the only hope. And therefore, my gift to the galaxy is trying to keep this child alive and raise him as best I can. I love your idea. It feels like an amazing like 5-part comic series where
sure.
maybe you have Owen, young Luke, and Obi-Wan all kind of circling, you know, and just understanding all that dynamic that's going on, and maybe some flashbacks in there too. And I just, it'd be fantastic.
There was definitely a, there was one bit from the Star Wars radio drama that always stuck with me, where Luke is confiding to 3PO, his memory of old Ben. And he talked about, and this was brought back in a comic story where Luke got into a bit of trouble out with the land speeder, and Ben seemed to show up out of nowhere
mm-hmm.
and help him out and take him back to the farmstead. And he makes reference, and this is in the radio drama, this was referenced in at least one comic series afterward, where when Ben brought him back, Luke was young, and he recalled that Owen was very stern with Ben and basically told him, get out. And Ben respected it. And Ben said, okay, I'm stepping away. So here would be another, you know, sort of aspect that I would want to get your perspective on is, why would Owen push Obi-Wan away so hard? He knows Obi-Wan is there. He knows Obi-Wan is staying on Tatooine. He knows Obi-Wan has a vested interest in watching over this child. Why do you think Owen would have worked so hard to keep Obi-Wan out of Luke's life?
In some ways, I think that it's the respectable version of what the Dursleys are trying to do with Harry Potter, which is they don't want him to be a wizard. They don't want any part of this weird, wacky life. You know, they want it to just all go away. I think that there are correct motivations for Owen in the sense that he doesn't want to see his nephew go down the same path that his father did, which is what's so wonderful about that dinner scene when she says, you know, he just has too much of his father in him. And he says, that's what I'm afraid of. And obviously, I think when George wrote that line, he doesn't know that Vader's his father yet, but it becomes something so much bigger later on when you think back.
Yeah.
And I obviously, with all of the continuity now, it makes so much sense that he's doing what he can to hopefully keep Luke from ever having to make the same decisions or be in the same place where he could possibly fall the way that Anakin fell. And, you know, that's a very parent thing to do, to try and maybe overguard your
right.
responsibility to your children and shelter them too much, you know? And so
what we would call like a helicopter parent. Or even they have ones now, I think one of the terms that I've heard is bulldozer parent, somebody who pushes all.
Mm-hmm.
No, but
yeah.
Owen, but
I think there they call him T-16
yeah,
parents.
Yeah, right.
So.
No, but I don't think Owen was the type of parent that pushed obstacles out of Luke's way. I think that he chose which obstacles Luke was allowed to try to conquer. Right. I think that Luke had to work hard. Luke had to become good at fixing things. Luke had to do all of this different sort of stuff. But there were other challenges Luke wanted to take that Owen kept out of his grasp, you know, the going to the academy and everything like that. So I don't think that he's a T-16 parent, as you would say. But I do think that he exerted influence to make it so that Luke had a challenging life in the way that Owen wanted him to have it challenging. Now, I keep coming back to, wouldn't Owen have some sort of sense that he would want Luke to be prepared? Like, wouldn't you, if you were Owen, have some sort of fear, some sort of sense that somebody was going to show up one day and try to take the kid away from you, and that it was going to be somebody like Vader? So wouldn't it be important to keep Obi-Wan with him nearby, like a lot closer than he was? Even if Obi-Wan's not living there, wouldn't it be like have him just over the horizon or something, where he wasn't very far away? Wouldn't you want him close by in case there was a problem?
Could be that Owen looks at Obi-Wan as maybe a lightning rod for trouble. If trouble's going to come, it's going to come from Obi-Wan, and that maybe be his fear.
That's not a bad thought.
I mean, Obi-Wan is somewhat responsible for Anakin leaving. You know, I mean, I'm sure that, I mean, at least from in Owen's point of view, you know, like probably from what he knows of the story.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's another thing that I would want the Owen book or series or whatever to explore would be that one little tidbit that never seemed to line up with the prequels, which I'm fine with because there's plenty of stuff. You know, I'm not going to go into another prequel defense or how well it actually matches up with anything, but there was that one bit where Obi-Wan said, your father wanted you to have this when you were old enough, which isn't really, maybe it's true, who knows. And he says, but your uncle wouldn't allow it. He was afraid you might follow old Obi-Wan on some damned fool idealistic crusade like your father did. I would love to hear, see, read that conversation between Owen and Obi-Wan where that line was said.
Well, and what I always think of, and I know this part's probably not canon because it doesn't jive completely with the movie, but I always think of the episode 3 novelization where it talks about Anakin and Obi-Wan, yeah, the heroes of the galaxy, and how everybody knows who they are, basically. You know, they're the name on everybody's lips kind of thing. My feeling is that Owen, especially after meeting his stepbrother, hears things. You know, they live in near Mos Eisley. He goes into town. I'm sure he hears reports in the Clone Wars, and I can't imagine that those names don't come up on the HoloNet at some point. And so him thinking of Obi-Wan and Anakin on some damnful idealistic crusade, which is a great measure of what, you know, the Clone Wars really were, because it was really a farcical idealistic crusade, yeah, on both sides, because it's just a big, you know, wag the dog moment for Star Wars. So, yeah, I think that's in my head canon of how he comes to that feeling.
Here's another question, though, and I don't quite know how to answer it. So I want to get your perspective on this as well. Do you think that Owen, like, going off of what you're saying, that he saw these crusades having to do with Anakin, his brother essentially is out becoming the hero of the day, and he's still back on the farm. Do you think there's some resentment that Owen has toward being pulled into this at all? He would have been happier. Do you think that Owen would have been happier, or do you think that there's a part of Owen that thinks, at least in the beginning, that he would have been happier if Luke had never been brought to him? If the last time he had to deal with a Skywalker was when his stepbrother, who he had just met, decides to go run off right after his mom died to go fight in a war.
Yeah, I think there's probably some validity to that. I'm sure that he is a human being and therefore probably did have those feelings at some point about Luke. And again, I think it gets to, I mean, let's just be honest. I'm sure that all parents think that once in a while in their darkest thoughts. If I just didn't have these kids, you know, it's got to come across every parent's mind at least once in their life. And this was not a planned child. You know, Beru and Owen don't have any other kids. So this is kind of that thing that got thrust upon them. And maybe you're right. It there could be some slight bit of resentment. Maybe at least at the very beginning.
I think, if I read this somewhere, it might be informing my opinion. I think, you know, as I'm about to say it, I think there is somewhere where I read it in an interview or something like that. But in my headcanon, Owen was somewhat resistant to the idea, and it's Beru because they knew they weren't going to have a kid. You know, they had the tests, whatever like that, that when Obi-Wan reached out to them, that Beru was the one that said, okay, because when Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Bail are all sitting there talking about the fate of the children, and Bail says, you know, we're going to adopt a baby girl. We'll take Leia. And Obi-Wan says, I'll take the boy to his family on Tatooine. He's just presuming. I would imagine there's also space there to imagine that Obi-Wan said, I'm going to take him to Tatooine. And then he reaches out to them. And Owen initially says, look, man, you know, this is your bag. This is your, you know, Anakin and I didn't exactly have a great relationship, if one at all. I'm not nuts about this idea. And Beru is the one that stepped in and said, Owen, you're going to do what's right. I mean, that sort of flips it on its head in the sense that I'm originally coming at this as Owen doing his duty, but I think that actually might add another layer to it. If we agree that there's some bitterness there at the very beginning, that Owen makes peace with it over time and exerts more of a fatherly influence. Like maybe it starts out with Obi-Wan closer, but as Owen grows attached to the boy, Owen is the one that starts acting more like a father and saying, no, I'm raising him. You gave him to me. I'm taking care of him.
And I think that you just made a fantastic argument for why relationship and commitment should have been an okay thing for the Jedi. Because of if that's the case, and obviously it's all speculations, what we do as Star Wars fans, And I think you have an amazing argument, because I think that it speaks from the films that Brew maybe has a bit more of a understanding of kind of who Luke is as a person inside, you know, and that she has that connection with that motherly type connection where she just kind of knows her quote unquote son, that she's the one, if she's the one who kind of talks Owen into doing the right thing, the ways in which attachment, commitment can help shape and form us to make us better, you know, in the way that marriage is supposed to, you know.
Right.
It's why, you know, what we both believe, John, marriage is a sacrament. So,
right.
It's meant to help, you know, break down the dross, you know.
The two halves form one. And you
exactly.
have the yin and the yang exactly. always playing off of each other. Yeah,
yeah,
I plug
there
into
you
that.
Go. And so, therefore, in some ways, showing the ways in which, you know, if the loves are ordered correctly, Jedi could have relationships and commitment, but also understand that there's something greater, there's something larger, but you can learn from that kind of commitment and relationship, not just to an order, but to another person, and that
right.
Beru is instrumental in maybe bringing Owen along and reminding him of what's really and truly important. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic thought.
Now, see, I this whole thing, seriously, I want to see sort of a, I mean, I have this whole epic story now with Owen built, but Beru being a very big part of it, of course, because when we meet, we never know Owen without Beru at any point in the films. And I think that in and of itself is also fascinating. I know that there's an implication that it's because they're, you know, simple farmers. And so, you know, they just, you know, it's like the high school sweethearts going out sort of thing. It's just, okay, well, we're going to be together for the rest of our lives sort of thing. But I think that that diminishes so much the possibilities that, you know, that you just hit on with the relationship between Owen and Beru. I mean, I would want to explore that as well. I mean, what has happened between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith that Owen and Beru are still there? What pains, what trials have they gone through to inform that sort of relationship, to make Beru as receptive to Luke as she is? I mean, of course, you know, with the headcanon part of it and everything like that.
Well, and I mean, obviously, Kleeg has died
right.
at that point, too, in that time period. So, I mean, there's been things that have progressed in their life that, I mean, obviously, they probably stayed there because of him.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they've taken over the family farm. But no, I think you create an incredible point that there is this interesting story that's happening that's leading you to the place where they will accept this child as their own and take on this burden. And I think, a comic series kind of telling that maybe non-linearly.
Yeah.
You know, with some flashbacks and stuff, or, you know, maybe even getting the flashback to when Obi-Wan first brings the child or explains everything and all of that kind of stuff, I think is fascinating. And they have been doing a little bit of that in the Star Wars comic. There have been a couple of issues. One issue actually very much is like what you were talking about that comes from the Star Wars radio dramas, where something happens with Luke and Obi-Wan in the shadows, you know, saves him, and Owen gets very upset at Obi-Wan and tells him to stay away. So they actually kind of canonized some of that you were talking about.
And the thing is, now I remember from the Star Wars Visionaries, which was the first time we ever got a taste of, and I know I've made reference to it before. I don't know if the thing's even in print anymore. Back from 2005, Star Wars Visionaries, where the artists all did their own stories or drew their own stories. And, you know, Maul comes back in that and fights Obi-Wan with robot legs on Tatooine. We all know that it's building that way, thanks to the trailer for Star Wars Rebels, toward a confrontation, a final confrontation with Obi-Wan and Maul. And in that one, and I would love it if they brought this in, basically Owen takes a couple of shots when Maul shows up, Obi-Wan and Maul have their fight. Obi-Wan has Maul at his mercy and has the hilt of the lightsaber pointed at his skull and his thumb on the activator, ready to turn on the lightsaber. And he's sitting there struggling with it because he knows he's not supposed to kill in anger. And then you hear the crack of a gunshot, and it's Owen that has killed Maul. And it's at that point in this version of the story that Owen looks at Obi-Wan and says, "Get out." And I think that speaks, actually, now that I'm thinking of it, I think that speaks to your point earlier that Owen might have viewed Obi-Wan as a lightning rod of saying, you know, you're going to stay away because so long as you're nearby, things are still going to keep happening and it's not going to be good. So I like that. I think that's even more support for the lightning rod theory. And wouldn't that be great if we saw that in the cartoon? I mean, if they're going to go down that road, why not?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That could actually be what happens in Rebels. Just FYI, for anyone wondering, Star Wars Visionaries is available on Comixology. You can get that digitally.
Excellent.
So still available, only $14.99. And I read a bunch of those, and they are totally worth it because it really was the opportunity for writers to just kind of let their imaginations expand without being constrained by any rules. You know, and that's fun. George allowed that to happen.
There's one that is completely nuts in that, and I don't know if you've read this one about the birth of the Force and the initial fight of the light and the dark. I mean, it is a way out there story, the personification of good and evil fighting at the birth of the universe sort of thing. And it's one of those ones where you read it and you kind of enjoy it, and the other part of you is thinking, this is crazy. I don't quite know what's going on right now, but it's really well drawn. So
what I love is the idea of diving into these, you know, a character study. I don't think anybody thought, oh, Uncle Owen. But when you just think about the impact, though, that Owen and Beru had to have had on Luke and the way that he does turn out. And this is something that we talked about all the way back, John, on our Godfather show, the 602 Club, when we were talking about the original Star Wars.
Yeah.
We had Riley and Bethany Blanton from the Star Wars Report on, and we even, I think the show's called like hashtag Aunt Beru Forever.
Yeah, yes, you're right. I think that is what it's called.
But we were talking about this idea, and it's so funny how this has just continued to percolate, this idea of the importance that they play in Luke's life. And that, you know, without them, would Luke have been the kind of person to be able to do what he did? And when you think about what Luke is able to do, to go sacrificially and try to save his father, it kind of seems to be what Owen and Beru do for him. They sacrifice their lives for this boy, and who knows what their life would have been without him, but they take care of him, they love him, they nurture him. And I think that's really fantastic that, you know, those same principles, those same virtues that they pass on to Luke seem to be there at the very end, which allow him to do what he does with his father and redeem him. And so I think that's a really interesting thing. And it makes Owen a character that I think, as we talked about here, I would love to have some more in. So, hey, you know, Marvel Comics, give us some more of those issues because this would be awesome.
Or hire us to write a book. That's fine, too.
Yeah, but we could do that, too.
Oh,
yeah.
Owen Lars, the best Jedi. Yeah, it ties into The Last Jedi. Yeah. So, well, I mean, this has been very stimulating. If there's anything that we have missed talking about Owen Lars, some aspect of the character that you think we didn't look at enough or something you think we were spot on about, whatever, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact. Reach out to us. You can look up the show, all of our shows there. You can drop a line to us. Let us know what you're thinking and what you think of the conversation we had. Do you have something to add to it? We would love to hear from you. thenerdparty.com/contact. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thenerdparty. Go ahead and drop a note there. We have lots of stuff going up on there having to do with our shows and other related topics that we talk about. And you can find us on Twitter @JoinNerdParty. That's the official network Twitter. And you can find the show itself at The Jedi Masters, and that is the dedicated show feed for Aggressive Negotiations. Now, those are all the official channels for people to reach us together, Matt. Where can they reach you online?
Well, you can reach me on Twitter, at MattRushing02. You can also reach the show on iTunes. Again, we just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who's reviewed the show. Really appreciate it. It helps other people find our show. So hit us up with your star rating and reviews and what you think of the show. We really do appreciate it. I am also on Instagram at MRushing. I am on the Trek FM network doing a couple of shows. One is The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. And I'm also doing the 602 Club. As we said, that's the godfather of this show. It's a general geek show. We're talking about all the fandoms we love. Make sure you check that out. Of course, Star Wars, the 602 Club collection, you can check out as well. And as previously mentioned here on the show, you can find me on Owl Post, a Harry Potter podcast with Drea Kaufman, as we are walking through every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. We're very early, so it's the perfect time to join us. Even if you've never read the series, you have plenty of time to catch up. If you've read it a million times, I think you'll enjoy the show just as much.
You will.
We like to connect all the little pieces. So now, John, I'm not the only one who's doing a ton of things online. You've got a lot going on. Where can everybody find you? And what should they be listening to that you're doing elsewhere?
Oh, well, gosh. You can look for Kessel Junkie. I'm on your social network of choice under that name. Trust me. I'm there. And you can also find me if you want to listen to me talk on other things. Right here on the Nerd Party Network, talking about the different projects of the creators of Star Wars, different movies that they've done, and different works that they've created on Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. You can find me over on the Trek.fm network, also with Mike Schindler, for a show called Stage 9, which is basically what I just told you about Star Wars creators, but for the people who create Star Trek. And you can find me with Craig Sorrell, co-hosting Words with Nerds, a weekly show about insanity, I think, and we dress it up with talk about nerd things. So that's where you can reach us. We want to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us. And Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.